You're listening to episode 3 of the It's Not Real Magic podcast. This episode was recorded on June 19th, 2019, and published on June 23rd, 2019. Welcome to It's Not Real Magic, a podcast without a consistent intro. The question of the day is, what is your favorite video game?
I am Lucas. I'm the youngest of the brothers. My favorite video game, I have to go with a game called Tribes Ascend for the PC.
This is Jacob. I am the middlest child of the clan, and my favorite video game is Super Smash Bros. Melee for the Nintendo GameCube.
My name is Alexander, and I am the oldest son. My favorite video game has got to be Call of Duty 2 on PC. Oh my goodness.
I'm Kevin, and I got skipped again. My favorite video game would be Dota 2 by Valve Software, a game that is free and yet I somehow have spent over $300 on.
Dang, son.
That's hallelujah.
Wow, cool. How many hours have you put into that?
It was over 2,000 by the time I stopped.
Well, you know, you're getting your something for your money, I guess. That's cool.
So, yeah, cool. I only had maybe 1,200 on Tribes.
There's a reason it made the list.
Because I'm an accountant, I have to factor salaries quite frequently. And if you want to figure out a annual salary and convert it to a per hour,
2,000,
you divide it. It's 2,080 is how many working hours are in a year. So it was, if you have 2,000, that means you played it 40 hours a week for a year straight.
There you go. Oy. However, given the amount of Call of Duty 2 that I've played, I'm probably pretty close to what he was doing, to be honest with you. And for a season, yes, Jacob, Super Smash Bros. Melee on the sweet GameCube, probably just as many, if not more, hours with all y'all.
Well, the thing is, it was with family. It was with the brothers. Mm-hmm. It really got our gaming itch, or, I don't know, our gaming obsession started. Mm-hmm. And without the stats on that game, I don't know if I would have gone into accounting.
This is true. Them stats were amazing. Absolutely amazing. You do that monthly, right?
Yeah. And then we would also twist the gameplay where we'd do like a free mode where we just play around on it with endless melee and just like be in it for hours, just goofing around in our own little world. Like you could break the game to play something else with it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we call that goof off? I think that's what we called that.
That was the preferred nomenclature of the time.
There were days where we would start a goof off early in the day and then like pause it and come back to it later. It's like, no, Mom, we're not just playing Smash Brothers. We're doing a goof off. We have to leave it here and then we'll come back to it.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
It doesn't count towards our gaming time. We're goofing off.
No, that game, I was trying to decide if I wanted to have that be my favorite video game. And I do have a lot of fun memories of it.
Hmm.
But it's almost like, you know, the whole favorite child thing. It's like, well, I mean, I love them all. I mean, this one definitely is not on the list, but all the others definitely in contention for favorite child.
Mm, good deal.
Have you guys tried to go back and play Smash Brothers now as an adult? I feel like it's different. Like I just can't control the characters like as accurately as I feel like I should be able to. I don't know if you guys have had any of that.
I think you just have gotten older. My reflexes and stuff have slowed down, and the constant playing, you know, just kept you so much faster, and reaction time and everything, and hand-eye coordination. That, yeah, because I've gone back and played like the newer ones more recently with some friends, and I can still kick some people's butt, but the people that play it more frequently can kind of still kick my butt because it's just like I don't have the old ways still in me.
Yeah, I feel like back in the day, like if I had a character, I'd know like 20 different moves with that character. And now if I played with it today, I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to stick to these 5 moves that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take characters that I know how to get back with.
I know the smash attacks are good, and then he has this one aerial attack that's good. So I'll just do all those. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we were younger, we fancied ourselves as being better at the game than we actually were. And now that you're older and you go back and play it, you realize that's like, wow,
we were only as good as a level.
I'm not good at this, and I'm not good at it now.
We were better than our friends, and that's all that mattered.
That's because they didn't have the game, and they'd come over, and we'd just like, "Hey, we kicked your butt again. Thanks, cousin."
It's like, okay, great. I was better than my brothers, my cousin, and my pastor. That's not exactly the greatest gaming pool.
No, that is not much of an accomplishment, really.
True. Unless, no, unless you took Roy.
There's always someone that is better than you at whatever you're doing, right? So, like, I have gone and played Airsoft with friends, and I'm not good at Airsoft because they do it all the time and I don't. But then if they were to come play Smash Brothers against me, you know, I'd be better at than them. It's all about what you've poured your time in.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some questions for my brothers that are going to sound like question of the day, but they're not. I guess there's multiple questions of the day today. This is something different I want to try to do with my section.
Go on.
The first question I have, I think this is a real thinker. You have to scratch your old cranium on this one. And this is free-for-all, and anyone can answer this. The first question I have is, would you rather lose the ability to read or lose the ability to speak?
I would rather lose the ability to read.
And why is that?
Because I like talking, and I don't like reading.
That's fair.
I would give up speaking because my ability to earn an income is almost directly proportional to my ability to read.
Alex, does your job not require reading?
You can fake it pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and most of it is just, like, what you'd be reading is sometimes even just symbols. So it's, like, drawings of things that you don't even have words to. You could figure it out just from pictograph.
I think I would rather be able to read and not talk. So I'm a pretty quiet person anyway. So that wouldn't be, you know, have that many words I'm giving up. And you could still communicate by writing. So you could still communicate to loved ones.
I think I just think too much of my own opinions and like to hear the sound of my own voice. Well, as this podcast may be evidence of.
Well, unless like Alex and Kevin are trying to communicate with each other. Kevin can't speak, so he writes something down and gives it to Alex, who can't read.
I'll just look at me and be like, fool? You know I can't read.
So what you're saying is the correct answer to this question is you have to learn ASL.
Ooh, pretty much. I've always wanted to do that.
Or just text.
But if they can't read.
Yeah can't, texting would count as reading, I would think.
Don't you have to read sign language? So would you not be able to understand that?
Ooh.
Well, like most would you rather questions, the...
You're just going to get really good at Pictionary or, like, charades.
The actual options are fairly ill-defined as to, like, well, what extent does reading mean? Like, do you lose the ability to interpret pictograms? Or pictographs, I suppose.
I think pictographs would be okay.
Hieroglyphics?
Here's another thinker for you. This one is less in the realm of communication and more in the realm of something near and dear to our hearts, as we've discussed before, which is food.
Oh, I was going to say video games.
Would you rather be able to only use a fork, no spoon, no knife, or only be able to use a spoon, no fork, no knife?
Again, I'll go first. I would say I would rather use the fork and forego the others. Because either way, you're not going to get the knife, right? And the spoon, like if you need to eat something with a spoon, you could probably tip the bowl or carton or whatever and get where you needed to be. I mean, it is hard to stab and cut a steak with a spoon. You can manage getting it onto a fork and then just chewing it like a caveman.
You take the spoon. Because you can sharpen one edge of it to create your knife, and then you just cut out notches, and you got a spork, and then you have all three in one.
Boom. Life hack.
He's making a sharpened spork. Ooh.
Make a sharpened spork, and you're good to go.
So let's just be clear. You choose none of the options.
I take all of them.
Super Swiss Army knife.
So here's my thought process during this. As my first gut says, well, you obviously give up the fork because that's the most modern of the inventions. Like, historically, the spoon and the knife were the pinnacle of utensils. But you're still giving up the knife, which makes the spoon kind of useless. And then I thought about it, and then I realized, wait a minute, I haven't used a single utensil today. So does it really matter what I pick?
Just McDonald's.
I was really hoping someone was going to go spoon. Like, oh, I'll just grind up all my food and shove it in my gullet with a spoon. But you took it one step further. Dude, just screw all of them. Just eat everything with my hands.
The thing is, right now, I don't use spoons for anything. Like, if I'm eating something, it's usually fork and knife, if that. But if it's like a burrito, you're not using anything. You're using your hands.
Pizza.
I will tell you this. Use your hands. As somebody who's been doing the dishes in our house for the last 2 weeks, we use way more spoons than we use anything else combined.
Do you like, eat cereal?
No.
But what are you using your spoons for?
I'm going to guess you probably scoop thing. Like you have a container, you have multiple ingredients, scoop them into one thing.
Salsa, honey, jellies.
Jams.
Yeah. Jellies and jams, yeah.
Preserves even.
No preserves, please.
A nice fruit compote.
Yeah, and so, and my wife likes her oatmeal.
Most of,
so,
here's the thing, most of those things you could use a fork for if you needed to.
This is true.
Jelly on a fork, man.
Yeah. Dude, jelly on a fork is a breeze compared to, like, peanut butter on a fork.
Ice cream on a fork? Cereal and milk on a fork?
I've done ice cream on a fork.
Ice cream on a fork is fine if you eat it fast enough.
Or if you have, like, some cake to mix it with.
Again, you let it get soft enough, you just kind of pour it into your mouth like a shake if it gets to that point.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. All right, I've got enough time, I think, for one last question. Would you rather have all traffic lights you approach be green or never have to stand in line ever again? I think I know where everyone's going to fall on this, but I'm curious.
I don't want to stand in line.
Really?
I'm willing to wait for a red light.
Okay, so here's the thing. How do you define standing in line?
I would say, okay, so let's say you're at the DMV and you are getting new license plate and you're sitting waiting for your number to be called. That counts as standing in line.
Okay, let's say there's construction up ahead and traffic's backed up for 2 miles and everybody's stopped. Is that standing in line?
I would say no.
In that case, you're not standing, you're sitting on your butt.
I just wanted to make sure, because if that's the case, then I'm taking the green light all day, every day, because one, I don't stand in line. Like, even if I go to like Chick-fil-A or something, I use the app. You order.
I use the app, guys.
And with all green lights, you're going to be there, you're going to be home. Like, the whole thing's going to take like 5 minutes.
I would save so much time every day just by skipping all the lights on the way to work.
Now, I will tell you, I thought everyone was going to say green lights. And I was tempted to roll that way as well. And then I had the thought, as I was reading the question, if I had all green lights, when would I ever switch the music on my phone?
When would I ever text my friends?
I would never wear out my brake pads.
You wouldn't even know if your brakes work. And then you'll meet them, and they'll be, found out they didn't work. You die.
See, here's the point.
You know, when you get to the ER, you'll not have to wait in line. You'll
have to wait in line. Or, no, you will have to wait in line.
You will have to wait in line. Oh, man, but the ambulance will have all green lights. But they do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, though. All you have to do is live 8 minutes from work, and then you don't have to worry about changing the song.
Well, I'm not in that predicament.
Or just put your earbuds in while you're driving, and then start the car, stop the car, get in the car, out of the car. It never stops. Walk into the job site, do your job all day, music never stops. Get in the car, go home, music never stops. You greet your wife, and you gotta take a night. Like,
there's a song coming out of this, like, music never stops.
I'm thinking of, like, one of those parody YouTube videos. Of, like, some guys just goes through his entire life, the music never stops. You go to bed at night, you still have your earbuds in, music never stops.
Helps you sleep. And the hilarious thing is he's only had one song that he's listening to the entire time.
And it's Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Exactly. Boy, I think there's got to be that side of a would you rather, and then come up with something else equally as atrocious.
So I've got something atrocious.
Yeah.
So would you rather live a normal life, or would you rather get $12 million in your hand today, but there is a snail that can never die, and its sole purpose is to find you and touch you, and when it does, you will die the most painful death imaginable.
At the risk of taking the sarcastic, morbid answer to this, I would say I would take the money.
You think snail ain't gonna cross ocean just go live across the ocean.
Could the snail get on a plane?
The snail ain't going to stop. He ain't going to die. Like, he can get across the ocean. You would have to crawl along the bottom to get to you.
Yep, he can do it.
He will find you.
Here's the thing.
You will not live in peace.
Has the snail chosen to not wait in lines? Because then it can get through the airport really quickly and get on a plane and catch you.
And if he has all green lights, he could drive a car right to you.
I feel like if you had $12 billion, you could build a house with snail sensors. And these snail sensors would allow you to sleep because they would go off and you'd know, oh, I still have 3 days before he gets to my bed.
But as soon as that sensor went off, you'd have to book it out of there. You'd be like, I'm out of here.
You'd have to build a new house, yeah.
What if the snail is more clever than that, though? Like you order Uber Eats and they deliver your food to you, and the snail has attached himself
to the delivery driver.
It's his sole purpose, man.
How big is a snail?
Snail size.
And snail speed? Like nothing sketchy?
Just snail speed, I think.
Hmm.
And obviously the snail cannot die.
The solution I've heard to this one is you basically use the money to get yourself a strong box, trap the snail in the box, throw the box in the ocean.
You cannot pick up the snail, you'll die.
You don't. You just basically build a trap that when the snail walks into it, it gets stuck in the box.
Or you pay someone $1 million to catch the snail for you.
The snail has a tiny jackhammer and can get out of the box.
I think you just live in a hot air balloon and call it that.
All right, here's what we do. Snail space tourism. Put the snail on a rocket ship. Put the rocket ship into space. Snail can't do anything. It's stuck in orbit. Go home.
It might be more than $12 million to do that.
I actually have a point.
It's not a big payload, man. Expensive. Rockets are expensive, but snails are light.
That's the name of your next album.
Rockets are expensive, but snails are light.
No, it's the two tracks that are like, it's like track 8 and 9 on the album. The first one is rockets are expensive, .. Track 9 is .. But snails are light.
And it's those tracks that just like the ending note of one leads into the beginning note of the other.
Now here's what you do. So every time a snail gets close, you go on a road trip.
Where do you road trip to?
Where do you road trip to? I mean, I went on a road trip earlier this year. I might go on a road trip later this year. I realized I've not been on very many road trips in my life. I also realized the four of us are basically never going to get to go on a road trip together.
I don't know about that. We've got long lives to live.
Might be one you big don't know that. Family road trip.
I don't know. Yeah, I've got a snail chasing me, guys. And I might not be able to go on a road trip with you.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I've got a snail chasing me. Let's all pile in the car and go on a road trip.
Well, here's the thing, though. It would be difficult to pull off now, but the families are not getting smaller. And so this is only going to become more difficult as time goes on.
Yes, but eventually the families that are growing have the growing families get older and children can take care of themselves. I don't know.
I think
leave the kids at home. The parents are going on a road trip.
Give me your definition of road trip. Like, what is a road trip to you? Like, is it a distance? Is it a duration? Is it what?
It would probably have to be. I haven't thought about this. I would say anything that like requires an overnight stay somewhere is a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to bend the definition of. Here's the thing. Anything smaller than that is a day trip.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably going to be the definition I'm working with. Is somewhere that's far enough away that if you are traveling by any sort of vehicle, you have to stay somewhere overnight and then you can return.
Okay, so when we drive back to Michigan and we just drive straight through for 20 hours, that doesn't necessarily fall into a road trip, does it? Because we're actually not stopping and staying overnight.
No, you're staying overnight at your destination.
Oh, right, but that's just a vacation.
Vacations and road trips are two separate things, but sometimes they are the same thing.
I was thinking about this as I was giving this definition, and I would modify it to allow for driving all night.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's what I did in my last road trip, I rode all night, somebody else drove.
Well, you're just choosing to, yes, you're driving all night, but my understanding is you and your wife take turns sleeping.
At some point, yes.
So
it is an overnight stay in a sense then.
Yeah, in lieu of stopping and staying somewhere overnight, you are just sleeping when you can and continuing to drive.
Okay, let me put it this way.
Your vehicle is your hotel room at that point.
But our vacation all was located in one particular area in Michigan. Driving there was the means of which we got there, whether we drove, flew, or took a train. Is it a road trip because we drove, or is it a means of transportation to get to our vacation destination, therefore not actually a road trip?
Because
I feel like a road trip is more like where driving is more of the vacation and you're stopping off at different things along the way, and it's more road-centric vacation time as opposed to just your means of travel. So like if you did like a East Coast road trip, you'd go so far and then visit something and then go another 2 hours down the road, visit something, get your hotel, get up the next day, to where it's all segmented and part of the adventure is the traveling along the road and the different things off the road that you're going to go do, as opposed to just a point A to point B. It's more of just a really long drive as opposed to a road trip.
I think we're getting hung up on the definition of road trip. I'm curious about however you define road trip. Let's hear some funny stories about a road trip that you've been on.
Well, are we telling funny stories? Or, like, I guess,
I mean,
Kevin, what were you going
my
for?
My next question that I was trying to get to before people got hung up on needless pedantry was, what is a memorable road trip you've been on?
Okay.
I've been on several memorable road trips. To briefly highlight my road trip experience, one road trip, we went from Kalamazoo to Cleveland, and Lucas had to pee in a Pringles cup. One road trip, I drove down to North Carolina with Alex overnight to pick up a geriatric chair. But we drove through Pennsylvania and West Virginia. It's the only time I've ever been in West Virginia. That's a crazy state. I've gone on a road trip with Lucas out to Wyoming. I've gone with a road trip with my wife to Kentucky and to Colorado. I've done a road trip to Branson, Missouri just recently. There's been plenty of great road trips I've been on.
Okay. Do you care to go into detail any of those, or are you just sort of going to list off your accomplishments?
I'm just saying I'm very seasoned with the road trips. So,
is there one that sticks out in your mind as the best one, or is it impossible to choose?
The best one may have been a road trip from Denver to Billings, Montana, because I was with my fiance at the time and my brother and soon to be sister-in-law fiance person.
My girlfriend at the time.
Girlfriend at the time, yes.
We weren't engaged at the time.
Yeah. Your inevitable sister-in-law.
Yes, it was
pending sister-in-law.
We were young. We were going to a place we enjoyed. We were with people we enjoyed. It was very memorable, very fond memories of that particular road trip. So that was an enjoyable one. I think they've all been enjoyable to an extent, but that one sticks out.
That's the one that sticks out in my mind too. It's between that and peeing in a Pringles can.
Right. All right. So road trips for me, well, similar road trips to Jacob, because most of the ones that he talked about, I was on too, for the first parts. Then once I got out here to Wyoming, like everything's a road trip at this point. So like going up to see my wife's parents or to visit my girlfriend, fiance at the time, those were all 5, 6, 8, 9 hour road trips, depending on where I was going, just to see them. But we have had a lot of road trips back to Michigan that have been phenomenal. We've road tripped down south to Missouri and Arkansas several times. Those have been really fun. We've done trips down to Denver and Colorado Springs and beyond. That's been cool. But I would say the best, absolute best road trip was our honeymoon. We road tripped on our honeymoon for like a full week. It was over a week, because we left the house on Saturday and didn't get back until the following Sunday. Yeah, so we were gone for over a week. And we went through Jackson and saw the Tetons leaving and coming back. We drove through Idaho and Oregon, spent some time out on the Oregon coast, and came back through like northern Oregon, southern Washington, back down again through the Tetons and everything. Amazing drives, amazing times, lots of cool memories. Lots of cool stuff that we did, just exploration experiences at like places that I didn't know existed, which was just really, really cool. basically almost like finding new things just off the road because we're on vacation. We didn't have anywhere we had to be, no requirements or anything, just go explore and have fun. And so we're driving along the road and it's like, oh, what's that? I don't know. Let's stop. Oh, well, if you go here, you can go to this thing. Cool. Let's go do that. So there wasn't any plan to it. There wasn't any stress of getting point A to point B. It was just go explore what's around the road or well off the road. And it was fantastic.
Okay. Do you have something you wanted to say, Lucas?
I was going to say that does sound like a good trip.
Okay. Then to close out my segment, I may be going on a road trip later this year. It will probably be alone, but it will be a road trip by my definition nonetheless. Do you guys have any good advice on what one should do on a road trip? Ranging from general Stay principles away. To something... Okay, duly noted.
Yeah, so I've found there's several. One, when you're driving by yourself, you get to decide when you stop for the bathroom, which is really nice. So take advantage of that and just be like, you know, I want to go another hour before I stop. Or you have to stop for gas and be like, okay, well, I'll stop for gas and I guess I'll use the bathroom because I probably should. So that's cool to have that much freedom and flexibility.
If you bring Pringles cans, you don't even have to stop.
Pro tip. That's a life hack right there.
True. Just don't forget the lid.
Also, don't forget to eat the Pringles first.
Now, the Pringles are salty, which will make you want to drink more.
Which will make you want to be. But, you know, staying awake, and there's a lot of different tricks to staying awake, and varies person to person. Some people need to talk, some people need to sing, some people just need the car to be quiet. I have found that I basically need to be, like, eating something, but if you're eating for 10, 12, 14 hours straight, one, you're going to get kind of full or sick of whatever you're eating. And so finding a snack that is keeps your mouth busy without making your stomach too busy.
Like sunflower seeds or something like that?
Sunflower seeds are great, but then, okay, what are you doing with all the spitting? You know, I mean, unless you're going to like the summer, you can just peel them out the window at 80 miles an hour, which generally blow back into the backseat, but whatever. You know, that's what the shop back's for.
All right, confessional time. I don't spit sunflower seeds.
Oh, jeez. I knew it.
You just swallow the husk?
The eight.
Yeah, you have to chew it really well first.
Paper plates.
Otherwise, you're going to regret it going down and coming out. But as long as you do that, it's fine.
Not worth the risk. Holy cow. Sunflower husk going down would be bad enough, but coming out? No way.
Kevin lives on the edge, man.
No way. Yeah,
he has the human garbage disposal.
Danger is his middle name.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No.
That would
make
them last significantly longer and take a lot longer to eat.
Which is true. Dude, I've had a bag of sunflower seeds at my desk for like a week at work and I just finally finished them today. And at 50 cents a bag, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I tend to just chew gum, but
chewing gum makes my jaw sore and the flavor never lasts long enough to keep me entertained. And so they just you know, spitting that out somewhere, swallowing it or what. But no, I found that like pretzel sticks are good because a lot of times if you're driving for long distances and you don't stay hydrated, you'll regret it. So I usually try to eat something a little salty so that I keep drinking water because then when I do stop, I do need to use the restroom and at least like flushing my system continually, which is good. But no, music, if you really like music, and then I haven't found like books on tape to be very helpful. I found that puts me more asleep or distracted because now I'm trying to like focus in on listening as opposed to just jamming out to music. So I would not recommend books on tape or audio that like you might drown out to.
It depends. If you're driving like in the day when you're like awake and refreshed and you're not even tired, books on tape are great to listen to in the car because it gets you thinking while you're just sitting there. But if you're tired and at the end of the night, don't do something that's going to put you asleep.
I also play the license plate game like a maniac when I'm driving.
The only advice I have is kind of know your limits. So like for me, just in the road trips I've done, I find that I can drive about 5 hours before wanting to usually swap with someone. But if you're driving by yourself, that doesn't apply. But at least stop and have a significant break, like actually get a meal and like sit down somewhere and eat it in the restaurant. So just kind of be aware of you probably will hit some kind of limit at some point where you need to take a significant break before starting up again.
And wear comfortable clothes and clean underwear.
That's another pro tip.
Because, man, if I'm not traveling in my sweatpants, I'm not traveling happy.
I'm confused. Is not the clean underwear given, like, regardless of whether or not you're on a road trip?
Well, just because you're, like if it's, like, the next, like, previous day's underwear, like, you just got up and get on the road and forgot, oh, yeah, I don't need clean underwear. Wait, whatnot.
You know.
You don't change your underwear every day.
Jacob, go.
I have had a friend tell me about a road trip that he went on with his wife, and they drove straight through. And so what they would do is they'd be out in the middle of nowhere. They'd set cruise control, and the driver would get out of the seat while it was moving. The passenger would hold on to the steering wheel. The driver would scoot back to the back seat. The passenger would then slide over the console, get in the driver's seat, and then the former driver would then slip back in the passenger seat, and they just keep going without ever even having the car stop. I would call that bad driving. What other bad driving instances have you had in your life?
I'd also call that highly unnecessary.
I kind of want to know who this person is now. My goodness.
I'll tell you later.
Excellent. No. Bad driving stories, huh? I'm not sure how many of those I actually want to share.
Since it's my topic, I will start off. So for the part, I'm probably not the safest driver or the most attentive driver, but I'm okay. Like, I'm not gonna go the worst driver out there. However, when I was dating Cheryl, and she was my fiance, and then just after we were married, it was a very transitional time in my life. Just lots of brand new things happening and not very much sleep and whatever. And I was also driving back and forth to Chicago a lot. And I think in the span of a year, I got pulled over like 4 times, got 2 tickets, and 2 times that they let me go free. It was different things. A couple of them were speeding. One of them was, I think 3 of them were speeding, and one was spending too much time in the left-hand lane on the highway. Like, it was just like this flurry of things. And one of the tickets, I actually had to do like a online course where you have to like learn driving all over again, or like go back to traffic school. And then that keeps points from going on your license and stuff like that. It was pretty crazy during that time. I was just not being a very good driver. And now that I'm kind of older, more settled family man, like now my driving, my past few years record's been clean. So, yeah, I seem to also to remember our mom, when she was pregnant, she would always seem to get in some sort of traffic incident. So it's just those kind of high intensity, high transitional times of your life where your brain is not focused on driving and focused on other things. And yeah, it was bad driving by me.
Mm-hmm. So my bad driving, the first one that came to mind thinking about this was the time where I was taking Kevin to piano lesson going along Sprinkle Road and went to change lanes without really looking over my shoulder.
I remember this.
There was a car there, and I was still young. Like, I'd only had my license for 2 or 3 years maybe at that time. I wasn't the best driver, I would say, at that point. Still not, but... And so when I come over, the only thing that actually ended up happening was my side mirror on my car touched the side of their car and scraped as they were going past. And so it kind of left like this black, like mark sort of along the side of their car, didn't even break off the side mirror of my vehicle. And so we pulled over and looked at each other's car, and the dude was, I don't know if he'd stolen the car or if he didn't have insurance or whatnot. He really didn't seem interested in like, oh yeah, let's call the cops and report this. So I was like, no, man, it looks like that'll rub off. Yeah, see you later. It's all good. And I didn't know at that point of like, what are you supposed to do in this situation? And so he drove off and like, okay, so what do I do now? Because I'm shaking. Yeah, so that was a interesting introduction to driving incidences of living with the consequences of your bad driving. But that probably wasn't the worst thing I did with that car. The worst thing with that car was, as driving, it's kind of your responsibility if the check oil light comes on, not to ignore it for a week, and had the engine blow up on me on the highway. That was a bad driving thing.
How did that go down, that incident with the oil?
Like this. Kind of like that.
Yeah. How did that go?
So Daffy Duck was running your engine.
Sounded like it, yeah.
You see Daffy Duck on a little bicycle.
Yeah. And he was smoking something too, let me tell you. So yeah, pretty much like that. No, I was just cruising down the highway and heading to work. And then suddenly, yeah, it starts making noise and the car kind of starts rocking and then just shuts off. And all the dashboard lights come on and I don't have brakes or power steering, or it was like, this is not good. Yeah, and that's at that point you realize, crud, I'm going to have to call dad. I think that's the first thing you realize when something like that happens. You realize, oh, this is bad. This is bad. Oh, this is going to get worse. So yeah, that was probably the hardest part. Cause then I had to call dad. He had to come take me to work. And then we had to tow the vehicle with the van to a shop and then get the engine replaced. And I had to be on the hook for a decent amount of that. And yeah. Not a great experience. I'll give you that. I certainly learned some things from it.
I'm going to hazard a guess here. You probably change your oil pretty religiously now.
I don't know. He hasn't learned this lesson.
No. He just knows to check the oil when the light comes on.
Yeah, if the light comes on, I'll do something about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or I'll at least Google it. But yeah, it'll definitely get that far.
Okay, so I have a fairly embarrassing bad driving story. This was recently after I had moved out to Colorado, Denver, and I had gone somewhere. I think it was, I played in like a floor hockey league for a little bit out there. And I think I was on my way back from a floor hockey game. So I would work all day at my job and then go play floor hockey in the evening. And it was a decent drive to get over there and then drive back home. So I was driving back in the dark, not super familiar with Denver at this point. And for some reason, I needed to take my car through a car wash. I don't remember why, but for some reason it needed to happen. So as I'm driving, I'm looking out for gas stations that have a working car wash. And I pull into this one because I see there's car washes in the back. I fail to notice that the lights are off and the parking lot is all like run down. And the gas station had been closed for a long time. The car washes were not in operation. So it's dark. I'm frustrated. I'm a little bit spun around on where I am because I had to pull into this parking lot. I'm not finding the thing I wanted to find. So I go to leave the gas station at a different entrance from the one I pulled in. And I do not notice, as I pull out of that gas station, the right turn only sign. The reason it was a right turn only sign is because it pulled out onto a boulevard with a raised grass strip in the middle. So I turn left onto this boulevard. I'm now facing oncoming traffic with a bank, you know, a raised green grassy bank to my right. Thankfully, the traffic had just recently stopped at a light further ahead and was just like starting to accelerate again. So amid all of them honking at me for driving on the wrong side of the road, I was able to find a gap in the boulevard and cut back to the correct side of the road. It's a very scary moment when you're not sure where you are and you're turned onto a road and are looking at headlights.
Like, I'm just getting like Mr. Magoo cartoon in my head right now. Way, wah, wah, wah. Crazy drivers.
It was that moment has stuck with me. One, because like, how stupid do you have to be to go the wrong way on a road? And two, just the terrifying look of looking up and seeing headlights coming at you.
Oh my god, you've done it again, sir.
Unless you're playing Frogger with the cross traffic, it doesn't really count in my book. So I'm gonna say you're fine on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Should have put that down as my favorite video game of all time.
Frogger.
Kevin, do you have any bad driving stories that you'd like to share? Or are you good?
I am the paragon of motor vehicular excellence. I will have you know, I've only fallen asleep once while driving.
Oh. There you go.
So back in the day at my previous job, I wasn't always the best about getting to bed on time. And I'm still not, but I wasn't then either. And so I would usually show up to work kind of tired. And on Fridays, I always felt especially like it. Well, I don't think this was a Friday. Couldn't have been a Friday because traffic was actually moving. I was driving home, and I was really tired. And then I realized I could not remember, like, the past 5 miles. I was like, was I sleeping for part of this? I had to have been sleeping for part of this, because I actually have no memory of, like, passing this exit. So that's where I was like, okay, note to self, don't do that again. I fixed that problem by moving closer to work.
Brilliant. I'm still not sleeping.
The only other, like, bad driving story I have is when I passed a police officer who then abruptly pulled me over for speeding because he was going over the limit. And if I'm passing him, I'm probably also going over the limit. No, I was. I wasn't going to say that, but I was going over the limit. He let me off with a warning. I do not pass police officers on the highway anymore. In fact, I don't pass most people because now I drive under the limit.
Wow.
So in reference to the falling asleep while driving, coming back from Chicago some nights when I was dating Cheryl, it was late at night. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And like you said, there was stretches of highway that I don't ever remember driving. And there's also many times when I hit rumble strips, and those would kind of bring me back to.
What they're there for.
Yep. Thank goodness for those. And then one of the times I was coming back to Chicago that I got pulled over for speeding is I knew I was tired. I think I had already stopped for one nap that I was still tired after that. And so I was kind of racing to get home just to go to bed. And so I was doing, 85 to 70 or something like that. And of course, they caught me and pulled me over. It's like, yeah, I'm just trying to get home. Like, I just want to be home. That's all I want to do.
I'm guessing that's one of the ones that they didn't let you go with a warning.
I
think I got you 15 over, but that's a pretty good ticket.
I believe he knocked it down to 10 over or something like that.
Oh, what a gift.
Yeah.
What a gift. I have one more, and this is because sometimes you got to own your mistakes that you live with for the rest of your life, right? I was helping a friend because I had a pickup truck at the time, and I liked this truck because it was like, oh my gosh, finally a V8. I've been driving these 4-cylinder Saturn Ion for pretty much all my driving life, and I finally got my own truck, and I have a V8. It's got horsepower with nothing in it. You hit the gas, and this thing just like throws you back in the seat. It's like, yeah, muscle. It was wonderful. Love that thing. Terrible gas mileage when I did that. Well, because I had a pickup truck and I had a good friend, he had a stove that he got a good deal on. And so I went and helped him pick it up. We put it in the back. We strapped it in, but we didn't strap it over the top. We just kind of strapped it in up against the rear window of the truck bed. And I'm on the highway and I'm being pretty careful. I mean, I'm not trying to like throw it left or right or anything like that. But at some point when we get on to from off one interchange to another, it's time to accelerate. And I just totally forget I really have anything in there. And I punch the gas and just boom, go from, 25 up to 70 in like, I don't know, like 40 yards or whatever. And I hear this clunk. Huh, wonder what that was. It's not until we get to his house, get his old stove out of his house into his garage, out to the truck, take the tarp off and see that the thing has fallen over and all the glass front and glass top is shattered. It was like, oh, dude. It was one of those moments of, I can't really breathe right now. Just like that gut sinking feeling of like,
Jacob, I don't know what's going on in your background, but I've locally muted you so as to not damage this recording any further. Please do message me once you've had that sorted. Thanks. This is probably a good time to move to the next topic. Alexander, what do you have for us?
Good PSA. So this is where my basis for this question idea kind of comes from. I'm still not even sure I fully teased out my brain how to even ask this or bring up what's in my head. So I still like to play the license plate game in my life, which is, as you see license plates from different parts of states, keeping track of, hey, I've seen all these different states. I'm still missing these states. If I can see this license plate, in the next year or month or however we're playing, usually it's just over the course of like a road trip, like from when we leave to when we get back, or some vacation or something, I'll count license plates at that point. Because out here in Casper, there's a lot of through traffic going to the Tetons, going up to Glacier, going down to Denver. We get all kinds of Canadian plates and pretty much from most of the states I've seen out here. So I was keeping track of these states like during seasons. So spring to summer, summer to fall, fall to winter. Mostly just basically spring to summer and summer to fall, because that's when most of the time you're going to see travelers coming through. And I was like three cars behind a plate that I knew was not one that I had. It's like I've been having, or at least I didn't think I had, because I hadn't seen a plate that color with that type of lettering anywhere else. Because as you play this game, you get comfortable with the license plates. You can spot different license plates from a distance without being able to see that it's in Idaho. You know exactly what the tint looks like. And so I was like, oh, I wonder what this one is. And I'm coming home from work, and they peel off onto a place that I'm not going, and I can't tell what it was. So now I'm stuck the rest of my life. I have no idea what that license plate was. And it's probably going to be the one that I need to get to 50 for this season. And so there's just kind of like that nagging thing in the back of my head of just like bugging me of like, I'll never have the answer to that question. There's no way I'll ever figure that out. I couldn't get the make and model of the vehicle, or I didn't divert my course to go chase them down because I was driving a company vehicle. So what do you do with like unanswered questions like that? And it could be as simple as a license plate. It could be as complex as maybe you would have liked to ask somebody a question that's now passed away, and you'll never get to have that question answered by them. And so you just live in that unknown zone. Or maybe it's like a life choice of like, I left that job for this job, and I wonder if I would have stayed, how things would look differently. What do you guys, have experiences like that you want to share? And what do you do with the thought or emotion or questions that you have that you can't?
So I have a two-part answer. One, I think I have at least some part of an answer for what do you do with that. As an example of something like that I have that I live with, my wife's grandfather on her mom's side was a very influential person in her life. Just a very positive influence, someone that she loved and looked up to. And he passed away in 2013, and I didn't meet my wife until 2014 or 2015. So I won't know him, at least not in this life. So that's something where I can learn as much as possible about him by talking to her and talking to her family and looking at photos and watching old videos. I have some knowledge of what he was like, but I've never had a face-to-face conversation with him. So that's the first thing that comes to mind for me of like, I don't get to experience what that relationship would be like. As far as what you do about it, I think the first thing that came to my mind was Switchfoot has a newish album, and on there they have a song called The Strength to Let Go, where it literally is like, give me the strength to let go of things. Some things are obviously more important than others, right? Like, it's not bad to wish that I knew my wife's grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I'm not saying let go of, the memory or desiring to know more about him, but let go of the sort of, I guess, fear of missing out is a term that gets used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it causes a lot of unnecessary anxiety and stress.
Mm-hmm.
The example you gave of, oh, what if I had stayed at that job? Or what if I had taken this opportunity instead? I don't see that ever producing a positive result for me in my life. When I second guess and question all my decisions, it just ends up being paralysis for me.
I agree with Lucas. If you think too much about it, or if I think too much about it, yeah, it ends up being kind of paralyzing and not helpful. I think what I would turn to is trusting in the sovereignty of God, knowing that he is in control of all things, and that he has set certain times for people to live and people to die and interactions that you'll have throughout your life. He's preordained that, and his will is good, and everything's going to go just as he has planned, and just kind of trusting that and knowing that, that kind of brings peace to the situation. I know for something like a license plate, it feels like, oh, maybe I could have, caught up that car or whatever. But when it comes to like loved ones and family and people who've passed away, that's really kind of the rock that I would cling to be able to get through that. I know, again, similar to Lucas, my wife had a younger sister who was born at trisomy 18 and passed away when she was 9 that I never met. And that sister was so formative for all of my wife's family, the parents and the siblings, and for my wife, Cheryl, like how she perceives death and how she grieves and how like all of her mindset of that is all was all kind of not tainted or stained, but
impacted.
It goes through that filter of losing her sister. And so I feel like if I had been there during that time, had seen Cheryl go through that, I'd be able to better help her now. And so I'm like, man, I wish I would have known Laura, but I didn't. So I have to trust that the fact that maybe because I'm removed from the situation, that I wasn't there when Laura was alive, that I'm able to help Cheryl more now because I'm not tied to that. I can kind of be someone from the outside that she can talk to and communicate with. So you try and pull the positives out of it from that. But yeah, it's something I think about when you know that there's a loved one passing away, or, you know, making sure that you clear the air and talk to them. And if there's anything like that to go through, but yeah, death is final, and it's rough. And that's why it gives us such great hope to know that there is the hope of heaven and seeing them again and being with Jesus. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction because of where I'm at personally, because I agree with a lot of what Jacob says, but I don't have a lot of things. Like, for me, it's not so much about the people that I didn't speak to when I had the chance, because I spent more of my time worrying about the people I do get the chance to speak to. My mind just doesn't go to those, oh, what if I talked to this person or done this thing when I was younger? There's a lot of times where I've been like, oh, I wish I hadn't done this thing when I was younger, but that's a separate topic. And so I'm going to be a little bit vague with this, because I don't know who's going to end up listening to this podcast. But for me, sometimes I've had unanswered questions that I've asked. And after learning the answer, I learned that I was happier when I didn't know the answer. And so there are other questions that I have in my life that I could go look up the answer to them and continually elect not to do so, because I would almost rather not know, because as long as I don't know, I'm at least somewhat happy. To where it's, well, if I knew this truth, would this actually make my life any better? Or would it just make me more depressed is kind of a strong word. Would it make me more dour? It's probably the word I'm going to go with.
I'm going to have a look up a definition on that.
It's D-O-U-R.
Oh, and you'll spell it for me. That's perfect.
I'm having a really hard time thinking of something that I have learned that I wish I hadn't. I'm trying to think of an example of that, and I'm blanking on it. But that's interesting. That's almost a different question than the one that Alex posed. Is, you know, what's something you learned that you wish you hadn't? That's a whole other topic.
It's true, but it's sort of like it does tie into the question of unanswered questions, because you guys are like, how do you deal with questions that you can't get the answers to? And for me, it's, well, I'm trying to deal with the questions I can get the answers to and don't. So the ones I can't get the answers to are like so much easier to deal with, because at least there's no like effort required on my part. It's just, well, it's not going to be this way. That's life. Move on. Which is sort of also the way my mentality has been shifting towards for the past year, which is maybe not the healthiest, but it's also just, that's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've become not fatalistic, but a lot more laissez-faire about outcomes in life.
Because I guess for me, what I was coming away with thinking about this topic was, if there were questions that I had, I should try and get the answer. Now, I know, Kevin, you're on the kind of the other side of this. Like, I have questions, but I'm not sure I want the answer. And so if there's like somebody in my life that, you know, is getting on in years, and it's like, I'd kind of like to know maybe a little bit more about their childhood or know something more about them. And if they pass away, then I'm like, well, I never really got to know them that well. That's probably not the end of the world. It's probably not going to bug me forever. But like, maybe I should make that left turn and go chase that license plate down because, I want the answer to that question. Because I almost feel like I like to ask questions. That's part of who I am, is I love asking questions that make people think and then get good answers. So I really should be better at podcast questions than I am. But
yeah, man, why have your podcast questions been so trash lately? Come on.
just get my
tough crowd.
There wasn't enough sarcasm in this episode. I needed to fix it.
Thank you. Finally. Kevin playing his role. But no, I think I'm kind of getting to the point of like, I need to be willing to be intentional about asking questions and putting myself in a situation to ask questions as opposed to, if the opportunity comes along, I'll ask the question then. But more so being intentional about getting answers while I think I want the answer. And I may get to the point where it's like, I don't want to ask questions anymore. These answers are terrible and they're making me dour. So
yeah, I think my life was a little better before I found out that Kevin eats sunflower seeds with the hull still on. That's something else.
I did not need to know that.
But you know, that was not a question we asked. That was the answer he offered.
That's true. Sometimes people just volunteer things.
Yeah. It's like Jeopardy, where he gives the answer, and we have to say, what is something that grosses us out about Kevin, Trebek?
I'm also...
No, see, that's one of the categories. You got six questions in there to find.
We're going to avoid that somewhere. Category, like, the whole thing. Like, that's the last one we hit. It's like anytime a sports category comes up on Jeopardy, and they're like, we're not going to touch that because we aren't going to get these answers. That would be that category for me. It would be the things about Kevin you didn't know.
So that should be our podcast topic next time.
Ooh. Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's kind of open to whatever you want.
I mean, I've got, 3 weeks to prepare a list? I could probably do it. I've been making a lot of lists lately.
Have you made a list of all your lists so that you can keep them organized?
It's called OneNote, and it is adequate. It's probably the highest praise I can give it.
Ooh, that was adequate. Mm-hmm.
I've been having a hard time finding a good note-taking system.
So how can we find an adequate way of signing off for this episode? Does anyone have any ideas of what we could do to end this and tie a pretty bow on it?
Well, I always think you kind of want to bring it full circle, don't you?
Actually, here's what I wanted to know, Jay, was who is the person on your road trip that you didn't want to share the name of?
Oh, yeah. So the name of that person is...